Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast. And I know it seems like it wasn't that long ago we said this, but it's true again. We have a top 100 prospects update at baseballamerica.com right now. Full update. Now, again, we have months where it's a full rewrite. And then we have months where it's a full update. This is fits in the update. The main thing that we were doing this month is late this week. I'm saying late this week because Jeff and I see the bags under our eyes. We're still writing a lot of these. But we are updating all 30 top 30 prospect rankings. So we're accounting for graduations. But more importantly, we're making movement based on what we're hearing, what we're seeing, reporting, data, everything to try to update our top 30s. And with that also, we want to make sure that our top 30s and our top 100 are in line. We're updating both of them. You see there at the bottom of the scroll, our top 5 prospects on the new top 100. And you may say, that doesn't look really any different than what it did before. Once Jackson Jobe graduated, that was the top 5. And that's 100% accurate. But that doesn't mean we don't have a lot of movement. Jeff, great to see you. And I'll kind of lead it into this because you and I were talking off show before about this today. This is fun because, man, what a great group of young shortstops we have in the minors right now. If you ask for the story of this top 100, without a doubt, there's some really interesting pitchers, but I would say more than anything, it's the young and in most cases, teenage shortstops on this list that have us really excited.
Yeah, and I think that there's just this sort of collection of players that were either in last year's draft, guys that took a big step forward from the lower levels the last year or so, and then, of course, some of the international guys that have come stateside over the last couple of months, and, you know, we've gotten an opportunity to see them here in the States in full-season leagues, a few of them, consistently. So I think, you know, really exciting group. And a really young and really talented group that the majority of players that we're talking about here, if not all of them, are under 20 years old.
19 shortstops in our top 50. So now, again, we always have said that the shortstops of today are your second baseman, third baseman, center fielders, right fielders, left fielders of tomorrow. The reason you start at shortstop is because you're a good enough athlete. And the great thing about that is you can play second or third or in the outfield probably. But a lot of these guys are going to stick at short. And like we said, we're not going to talk about Jesus Mate, Sebastian Walcott, Leo DeVries. Those guys are still right there at the top. Marcelo Myers come to the big leagues. That's not what we're talking about today. Today, we're talking about the guys who are big movers in this month's top 100 update. And that's a whole lot of young shortstops. Cole Young is 21. He's the old man here, but he's also in the big league. So we'll excuse him on that. But Cole Young is going to play second in the big leagues for the Mariners, but is a shortstop also. Bryce Rainer, Connor Griffin, Luis Pena, Arjun Namala, all moving up significantly. I would say that these guys have different characteristics, but who's one that jumps out to you? I'll put it this way. You know what? I'm going to sign it for you because this is one that you do and you've advocated for pretty strongly. Arjun Namala, at this time last year, looked lost in the Florida State League, was a couple of weeks away from being demoted to the Florida Complex League to kind of get everything put back together. To his credit, he did put it back together, and then he had a very strong end to his season in the Florida State League. This year as a 19-year-old, one of the best hitters in the Northwest League, showing real power and doing so, again, as a teenager, as a 19-year-old. What excites you about Arjun Namala?
Yeah, I think when you look at this player, it's important to keep in mind how young he was at the time of the draft for an American player. He was almost younger than a lot of guys who have reclassed as high school players. He was 17 until October 16th of that year. It was when he turned 18. So his first full professional season, he was 18 years old until October. I think there was always some rawness to his game, and just in terms of exposure to, you know, better pitching and all those sort of things. And I think player development felt that way a year ago, that, you know, maybe the assignment to low A would be too much. It kind of proved to be. There were some tweaks and things that they had wanted to work on. They were able to do that with the swing. Since that point, it's only ticked up and gotten better. What he's done this year is really take a step forward with all of those underlying skills. The power's always been there. He's hitting the ball harder than he did last year. He's hitting the ball in the air consistently, just like he did last year. He's getting into pull side power more frequently than he did last year. The biggest thing, though, is the swing and miss and the bat to ball skills have ticked up significantly. And it hasn't been with some tremendous drop in terms of swing rate, just in terms of, you know, trying to put the numbers into terms of context. Swing does a great job of contact and chase and some of those things.
Can I interrupt you there just to explain that to people, right? Which is, if you had seen that all this came with a drop in swing rate, that would actually be a little, not concerning, but that would almost explain it, would it not?
Yeah, exactly. It would explain it, and it wouldn't be sort of as exciting of a drop or in terms of whiff or a jump in terms of contact, because they're obviously the inverse of each other. So when I look at a swing rate that is around the same rate as it was last year by 1 or 2 percentage points, it's not a fact of him being overly passive and really limiting his exposure. He is attacking. He's not overly aggressive, but has a nice approach. And now he's making contact at an average or better rate. The strikeout rate reflects that. He was a 30% strikeout rate across all levels last year. This year, 17.5%. He's walking more this year. And I think it's really driven by good swing decisions. And that's stuff that we saw in spring training on the backfields from Namala. He's a really good defender, got outstanding, you know, above average grades on the glove and the field, as well as the arm. And there's a lot of belief that he's going to stick at shortstop long term. So I think we look at that defensive value that you talked about, that athleticism, when it's paired with power that was always kind of the calling card for Namala as a young player, even with those struggles, by the way, last year, still had 17 home runs in his first full professional season, a pretty good number, slugged
40. While playing in the Florida Complex League, in the Florida State League, which basically is death to power.
Yeah, exactly. And 82 of those games came in the Florida State League, in Dunedin, you know, where there's definitely marine layer. It's right in the water. Air is heavy. It doesn't carry there. And then, you know, he goes to Vancouver, better hitting environment, but there's a lot of underlying skills to go along with the power. Now we've really seen progression in terms of Namala's hit tool. And when all the other stuff is present and the hit tool takes that step forward, and it's in a reasonable time frame, it's at a point in time where he should be making tremendous leaps and bounds in terms of his development. That's usually one of the hardest things to teach. You know, you can get guys to add more power. You may never make a guy have 70 power, but you can take a guy with 45 power and probably bump it up to 50, maybe even a little bit more. We've seen the Red Sox do stuff like that. It's a lot harder to get guys who have, you know, sort of natural swing and miss in their game to sort of eliminate that. There's not a lot of hitters or prospects historically that's eliminated. They can limit it by swing decisions and some of the things we talked about earlier in the conversation, but to still have sort of a baseline of aggression and improve those skills, very rare. And when it happens this early, usually something that's probably going to stick.
I'm going to ask you a question now that I feel like we're going to be asking and talking about for several years to come. Last year, top two shortstops in the class, in the draft class. Bryce Rainer, Connor Griffin. Here we are. They're both in the Florida State League. And I would say you don't want to go overboard, right? Like a guy could come out and have a fall on his face early and then adjust, develop. We just talked about Arjun Namala did that last year, right? If you wrote off Arjun Namala the moment he struggled in the Florida State League early in the season, you're probably regretting that now, because look at what Arjun Namala is doing now. That said, when a draft prospect goes out and performs the way and shows the tools, more importantly, to go with the performance, the way that Rainer and Griffin have, makes you feel really good about the long-term prognosis for these players, because you can always see, like, there could be, like you said, if you have real swing and miss issues early on in your career and that derails you, that's often a fingerprint, right? That's often not, like, that's often something that's kind of cast in concrete, and it's going to be a problem for you all along. That was going to be the question with Connor Griffin, I would say, coming out of amateur ball, was no one questioned the athleticism, the tools, you know, that he was, had really significant upside. But a lot of evaluators, a lot of scouts looked at his hit tool and said, I don't know if I can be real confident in that. I feel like here we are a year later, we can be a lot more confident about it. But how do you see those two shaping up?
Yeah, they're sort of different profiles at the same position, where Griffin is like this tooled up athletic freak, sort of the sky's the limit in terms of what he could be if it all sort of hits that ceiling, you know, that top of the, you know, the top 5th percentile sort of outcome, right? Where I think, you know, Rainer is much more of like a Corey Seager sort of, you know, bat driven shortstop, but can play the position because his hands and actions are so good. His first step is really good. You know, obviously the good arm as well.
And a plus arm, which is what Corey Seager does. I mean, that's what
Corey Seager. And, you know, that buys him a little bit of range as well. You know, there'll maybe always be talk of maybe he moves to third base. Maybe he does, depending upon, you know, what the major league team that he's on at that point in time. If it's the Tigers, if that's where the hole is, he certainly could fill that hole. We saw it with Marcelo Meyer, kind of a similar bucket of player. Really advanced hit tool. We saw that in spring training. And there's a big underlying power as well.
I just want to interject on that also. Part of that is going to be interesting is he – we didn't talk about Kevin McGonigal. He's another guy who made another step up a little bit, but Kevin McGonigal's ahead of him in the Tigers system as far as level. So
and ranking.
Prospect and ranking. So to kind of what you're saying, if Kevin McGonigal reaches the majors and is this great young shortstop, and again, I think that Rainer actually does have at least a chance to be better defensively. But even if he is maybe going to be a little bit better defensively, if McGonigal's a year or two ahead of him and has already established himself as this is one of our cornerstone guys, usually the next guy who arrives doesn't say, excuse me, but you know, I need to move you to second base or third. Usually it's like the next guy who shows up and goes, okay, I'll play third base.
I'll say this. The Tigers have been very good this year. And you know, the one thing they're probably looking forward to with this group in a few years is the fact that they might have a little bit more sturdy defensive presence in the infield.
I was talking to a, you know, working on the Tigers list for our top 30, and someone made the point to me, this group of hitting prospects is better, like, than their previous groups, right? I know Torque has had a resurgence. I know Riley Green's pretty solid, but if you just look at it, those were Colt Keith, Jace Young. Those were almost without fail. Green has some athleticism, but those were like bottom of the defensive spectrum guys, or you're hoping to kind of piece them together in the case of Keith to play second base, in the case of Young to play third base, first baseman. You could play Riley Green in center, but you're always going to have a better center fielder. You want to put him in a corner. Those were bat first guys. This group they've got now with McGonigal, Max Clark, and Bryce Rainer are all impact defenders, up the middle guys who also might be as good a bat, if not better, than those guys we were just talking about. Really probably are better bats. So they really do have this wave like, okay, Max Clark may not move Parker Meadows out of center field. There's no shame to that. But if you put Max Clark in a corner, he should be one of the best defensive corner outfielders in the game, and he could be a plus defender in center. McGonagall could be a plus or plus plus second baseman, but he should be able to handle shortstop. And we just said Rayner could probably do it too.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting about, you know, that positional group with Detroit right now, and the fact that the major league team is clicking. And I think you can kind of look at some of the players in their lineup and realize these are very easily replaceable with younger, more talented, and probably cheaper players in the coming years. This team could get even better.
Right. It's timed actually pretty well. You'll have this young wave of more position player talent arriving at the time that the pitching is going to get a little expensive, which is fine. Pay Tarek Skubal, pay the man. Like that's not a problem, right? Like that's something you should do because he's one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in the American League. But you're right. Like they could, it also allows them some creativity here going forward. Like I would say that those three are, you know, they also have a lot of catching depth. We like their catching depth. They have Thyron Lorenzo. They have Josue Briseño, who might be a first baseman long-term. Maybe that's Torch replacement down the road, but anything else is pretty much like, hey, you could trade it if, you know, or you could trade from their big league kind of depth in some ways too. I mean, so there's a lot of good there. We want to cover. So Cole Young just came up to the majors. We talked about him, I think a little bit on the Hot Sheet show yesterday, but do want to cover him. He's another guy moved up. I would say of this group, he's very much the lowest ceiling of all these guys, but he's in a different world as far as likelihood too. This is a guy who's reached the majors now, drove in the game-winning run in his major league debut, but I don't want to sell him short. Like you and I both kind of, I think, feel like that the well-roundedness of his game gives him a chance to be a very solid, like long-term productive big leaguer.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, a matter of some of the power improvements that we've seen this year where he's gotten a little bit closer to average. You know, if you can marry that with really good approach and really good bat to ball skills and some speed, you know, it can certainly, you know, compound and start to turn into production. And, you know, I don't think he's certainly the athlete that like a Brendan Donovan is, but I think like that kind of player who over time seems to like every year get a little bit better and a little bit, you know, more at home in the major leagues and just capable of doing so many different things and playing a variety of different roles, that will make Young a really valuable player. It might be as, you know, an everyday second baseman that, you know, hits for a good average, gets on base, can score a lot of runs and sort of be that leadoff kind of spark plug that you need. And I think sometimes players like that can get a little bit underrated.
I'll throw a weird one out for you. What about Ketel Marte, who was a Mariner coming up? And by the way, I bring that up just because when Marte, who reached the big leagues as a 21-year-old for the Mariners.
Yeah.
And then that next year, he hit one home run in 119 games, right? Because the question we have, like you and I both talked about, Cole Young's power right now is not that significant. It's not. That's the question about his game. I am not going to say he's going to have the transportation that Marte had, but it is, you know, amazing that Marte went from hitting one home run in 2016 as a 22-year-old to 32 home runs as a 25-year-old. And he's done, you know, 36 home runs last year. Please understand me. I am not saying that Cole Young's going to end up being a 35 home run hitter. I just want to bring it up from the standpoint of like, if you're an advanced hitter, sometimes the power then arrives because you're just such a good hitter and that you learn how to drive the ball more.
And that's certainly like a lot of the numbers early on, first few seasons in Seattle for Marte are pretty comparable. So, you know, it's never out of the realm of possibility for a lot of these guys. And I think we've seen with a player like Chase Meidroth with the White Sox, who's been a really valuable rookie, and I honestly might be in rookie of the year contention in the AL.
How a Jacob guy like Wilson's that, like, I'm playing shortstop every day, you know, and I'm going to try to take it from
Yeah.
But at least in the discussion,
conversation to at least get second place votes, right? But I think with Meidroth, he's been a really valuable player at the major league level so far. And it's similar that it's a sum of its parts player. And I think you can probably argue that there's other skills and traits and characteristics that Young has at a much earlier age, because he's 2 years younger than Meidroth, you know, and might be able to do that stuff in a more sustainable way long-term. So, you know, it should be interesting, but I mean, you know, over his first 37 games, for example, Meidroth is a 1.2 WAR player. So sometimes guys like this that have that prerequisite contact skill and approach, it can go a long way in the major leagues. And sometimes it sort of settles the floor a little bit in terms of, you know, guys getting their sea legs and settling in.
There's one more shortstop in this group that we want to talk about. Shortstop, second baseman, in middle infielder, let's just say. Luis Peña. Okay, and I'm going to ask a provocative question to start it, and then we'll kind of, you know, but I'll just ask you, like, not that it's likely. Clearly, we don't think it's likely that Luis Peña is going to be better than Jesús Mate. If we did, we would rank him above Jesús Mate. And Jesús Mate, as you see on our scroll, is one of the top prospects in the game. Luis Peña's moved up, but he's not one of the top 10.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
However, I don't think it's implausible to think that there's a path, that there's a 15, 20, 25% chance that Luis Peña could be better than Jesús Mate. That's why we're moving him up on this list. Am I crazy to think that, or is that something that you could see the case for as well?
It's provocative, JJ. It gets the people going. I like
hot
that.
Take here.
It's blades of glory. But yeah, I think I don't think it's crazy. And like, I really banged the drum hard for Mate in the offseason, and I don't feel like he's really disappointed at all.
No.
I mean, I'd love it if he had a 1000 OPS. He certainly held his own in full season ball at his age with no stateside experience whatsoever. And there's a lot to like, right? He's twitchy. I still think that the upside might be higher, but I will say this. I do think there are some things, and I wrote about Peña earlier in the year and kind of compare and contrasted these two guys in the same article. Peña has some stuff in terms of batted ball angles and barrel control that Mate just doesn't have yet. And whether that does come to fruition in Mate's game remains to be seen. But that's certainly one area that Peña seems to have very special skills in terms of barrel control and being able to hit a variety of pitch locations and pitch shapes and types and velocity types in like the most flush way possible is probably the best way to put it, right? And we were talking off air, and we don't have comparable data, at least publicly, that I've ever seen from as Altuve was coming up and that sort of thing. It would be interesting to see.
I don't think it existed.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if there were these underlying EV traits before he sort of started to find more barrels. He kind of has that like prime Altuve sort of profile. That's what you can kind of see him to project as a guy that can hit for power despite not being the biggest guy. He's bigger than Altuve. He's not a tiny guy. Yeah, he's but able to run, has speed, is a really good base runner. Maybe not a shortstop. Fine, he ends up at second base. It could be like a perennial all-star. This looks to be a very special bat. When you dig into the numbers, when you watch the tape, when you watch Carolina consistently, I'm not surprised when he does something big. When he has a huge hit, it's not a shock. And as Josh has said to us in our meetings, when we're strategizing these lists and talking through players and talking through feedback, he said, there's most days you show up at Carolina and you watch that team, you might think that he was Mate. If you just said, hey, there's two really good prospects, one of them is the most highly billed guy, you might think that it's Peña.
I would say a lot of the reasons, and you've already hit on them, a lot of them, like Mate has some special skills. The other part of this, though, is if you said, well, why is Mate a better prospect than Peña? It's the physicality. I would say, like, if you said you're projecting out like where they're going to be, I would say that, you know, these are two guys in low A, right, who are just playing full season ball. So I don't want to say like that Luis Peña's maxed out. He's not maxed out. But what I would say, though, is that there's more headroom for Jesus Mate to keep adding more just because he has the frame to kind of be that big and rangy guy. Where in Peña's case, you know, I think Mate like had a chat question today at baseballamerica.com where someone asked, like, how do you think the Brewers infield lines up with these prospects long term? And I want to see what you think. But I said, my guess is if all these guys make it, it's Pratt at short, it's Mate at third, it's Peña at second, because Pratt's the best defender of the three, and I would say the most traditional shortstop. Mate has the frame to be that plus defender, plus offensive impact third baseman who could maybe play short. And Peña could maybe play short, but probably fits best. And defense, I would say, is his kind of most questioned tool. And that where second base would, you know, he kind of has the frame. He's a little shorter to be probably that second baseman of the group. Does that, you know, like, do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I think that probably makes the most sense, it, just in terms of where the arm's at. And I think, you know, Mate and Pratt together on the left side of the infield would be pretty dynamic.
Yeah, I would also point out, like when you said, would you love that Mate had a 1,000, OPS? He's one of the youngest guys in the league, and he's got an 816 OPS in a league where the league OPS is under 700. Yeah. So, like, you have
Carolina
to also,
is not a good hitting league, despite the lack of pitching talent kind of across the board. You know, I would say that this, I've had people with teams say this to me, that it's almost seems like it's now a level between like short season and what low A used to be, especially as guys move out over the first month and you get some of the guys that jump from the complex after a week or two. So it is a very young competition, but the ball doesn't carry in those parks at all. I mean,
by the way,
you watch a game in the Texas League versus that, this is a significant difference.
Be jealous. Because when I get these top 30s done, where I'm spending the rest of my week is in Zebulon, because we have Carolina versus Charleston this week. So like tonight, we had Theo Gillen and Braylor Guerrero one batting 1-2 for Charleston. And it was Mate batting, you know, leading off, playing third. Braylon Payne, Luis Peña, Eric Batanti, you know, on that that Carolina team. So I'm going to get to see that this week, which will be fun. A lot of fun.
Pretty good.
But, so that's kind of our look at some of the rising players. If you want more about this, I mean, I'm preempting the comment right now. Someone is going to say that we are clickbaiting because we didn't just read our entire top 100 on this YouTube show. No, we're never going to do that. I will give a further preemption. We got the top five down there. We've talked about multiple players who are moving up on it. But if you want the full list, baseballamerica.com. We have full explanation. If you want to know the movement of every player in our from our January to our April to our May to our June list, we have that all there at baseballamerica.com for Baseball America subscribers. We have a full explanation of all the risers, fallers, graduates, players who dropped off the top 100. All of that's there at baseballamerica.com. But we will hit a lot of the highlights here and try to do that on our podcast / video show every week. You know, so here we do. That's what we're doing. But that does still give us time for our prospect soapboxes, which, as you know, if you've listened every week, the rules of this are, we just talked about the top 100. Can't talk about the top 100 here. Top 100 prospects are ineligible from the prospect soapbox. You have to talk about someone who is not on the top 100. Beyond that, pretty broad. You can talk about whoever you want. So, Jeff, who's the prospect that you wanted to talk about this week?
We're in the process of updating our top 30s. And I think there's a lot of work that goes into that. Kind of dig a little bit deeper with sources and just get a feel and a temperature for how folks around the game feel about players. I handle the Cardinals top 30 list, have since I came aboard in 2021. I guess 2022 is when I first started handling it. And you know, we had two really talented players come over from the Dominican Summer League this year. Kind of similar to the Brewers too, that we were just talking about. Not quite as good as those guys. They didn't make the jump to full season either. Some of that is probably the way the Cardinals handle things. One being Yarío Padilla and the other being Ryan Rodriguez. Rodriguez has been outstanding thus far in the Florida Complex League. I think easily the best hitter, at least prospect age hitter, maybe in either complex league. At the time of reading this, he's hitting 362, 506. That's his on-base percentage. Barry Bonds, like 828. That is a cool 1334, and that's across 19 games. He's got seven homers. The underlying data backs it as well. We were talking about this earlier this morning. Lower swing rate guy, there is some swing and miss. Rarely ever chases, but the contact rates are kind of at a fringe average level that it's acceptable when you consider the kind of power this guy has. Really high barrel rate, you know, big EV numbers, you know, has a 110 max already, really good angles as well. So the fact that he's having this sort of production isn't a shock. But the tricky part of doing these rankings is you have a guy like Padilla who is projectable, an athlete, probably going to stick at shortstop, has more defensive value. And you have a guy like Rodriguez who, you know, is a catcher, has caught 13 games this year, but it's questionable if he's going to stick at that position long-term. There's big questions on the defense. So it's one of these conversations that we constantly have to have when we're doing rankings of, you know, how much do we weigh that? The most important thing is hitting. I don't disagree with that. But there's also sort of this balance of skills and everything sort of cycles together to kind of create a player. And it's so hard when you have a guy like this where you're really not sure if he's going to end up as a DH. And the measuring stick and the level that he needs to perform at, and then the opportunities that need to be available in limited spots, unlike shortstops that we talked about earlier on in this podcast, it becomes a harder profile to rank. So he hasn't moved ahead of Padilla just yet, but has moved inside of the top 10 and is a ascending prospect and a really interesting bat. But once again, really tough kind of prospect to rank in terms of universally against the rest of, you know, the 900 prospects we have reports on.
That's another thing I would say as our top 30s roll out later this week, especially when it comes to complex. I got a question today about Yairo Padilla, and say, like, how worried should we be? Because it's been a bad first month. And I'm like, when you are T minus less than 25 games in the Florida Complex League, I'm not going to get that worried yet. Like, you're making the jump to the States plus doing that. But that's where I would say we're trying to be conservative on this week, this month's update for this, especially with complex league players. Give us another month, right? Like, that's what we're saying. We're going to know more in a month. So right now, Padilla's ahead of Rodriguez. That may change next month. Josh Norris is out in Arizona joining Jesus Cano out there for us in the Arizona Complex League right now. Josh is getting ready to head to the Florida Complex League after that. We'll be talking to a ton of scouts. We'll have our ACL and FCL top 20 prospect list coming out before the trade deadline is our goal. So, you know, there's a lot more information that we will have, but also there's a lot more information that the players that will provide, because a slow start in a league like that doesn't mean that much. You know, but at the same time, we're not ignoring it either. That's the clever balance here, you know. But okay, my prospect soapbox is, I think that the Twins have had both a really rough year in the minors. When you say, like, in an ideal world, I would say very confidently, you would not want Walker Jenkins to miss the entire first 2 months of the season with another injury, the ankle injury that sidelined him. Emmanuel Rodriguez is supposed to be out for 1 to 2 weeks with this sore hip. It's not a structural thing or anything like that. That's good news. But Emmanuel Rodriguez is back on the IL. Luke Kuechel. So the Twins had 4 top 100 prospects to start the season. Zevi Matthews has graduated. He's in the rotation. Walker Jenkins hasn't played. Emmanuel Rodriguez is on the IL right now, which is the fifth time that Emmanuel Rodriguez has gone on the IL in his 5 professional seasons where he's played games. And then Luke Kuechel is out for significant time, having reached the majors and looking very good before he did. So that's not great. That's rough. But that said, I think it's actually been a pretty good season down on the farm for the Twins. And one of the main reasons for that, there's a lot of things that are impressive, but I would say if you look at the college hitters that they drafted, hitters that they drafted relatively high in last year's draft, pretty much sent them all to Cedar Rapids. We got Billy Amick there. We got Kalen Culpepper. But the guy I'm going to talk about today is Kyle DeBarge, who really, you know, intriguing. Like, this is unfair for him, but I kind of call him, he kind of is like the Luke Kuechel starter set. They have a similar profile as good hitting middle infielders who have some positional versatility. I would say DeBarge is a more of a shortstop than Kuechel ever was. So that's something for him. Both of them, I think that DeBarge might be a better center fielder also than Kuechel. Kuechel, I think, is a better hitter. But we've seen DeBarge have a really good start to the season. The pretty surprising thing, though, is he got 30 steals as well. Now, there's some speed there, but I did not expect 30 steals by early June from him. He's running wild, and he's doing it very efficiently, probably more importantly in the long term. Really good batting eye. I kind of guy who's probably going to always post high on base percentages. The combination of this hit tool plus that with a little bit of pop, with the ability to play second and short and center, that's a pretty good combo. And he's a guy who's moving up in the Twins system. They have a number of those guys. We could talk about Dayson Hill. We could talk about Kalen Culpepper. We could talk about Billy Amick has been really good. He's on the IL briefly as well. Shouldn't be hopefully an oblique injury for him. But there's a lot to be impressed with, even if the top tier of that Twins list has had a lot of injuries this year so far. And again, we didn't even get into some of their other pitchers. Connor Prelip being back and healthy, I think he could even have an impact at the end of the year at the big league level potentially. So there's a lot to pay attention. But again, if you enjoy that, baseballamerica.com, we're going to have full top 30s updates. And again, the same thing that we're doing with the top 100, we'll do that for the top 30s. We're not just going to roll out a new list and say, here it is. We're going to have stories on each team saying, here's the guys who've graduated. Here's the guys who are moving up. Here's the guys who are moving down. Here's the guys who, you know, were added. Here's the guys who've been injured and what their injuries are. We're going to have all that for you. If you enjoy that, check out baseballamerica.com. We also hope that you're enjoying the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Again, we do this every week. Rolls out Wednesday morning, 9 a.m. Wednesday morning on YouTube, 5 a.m. Eastern on the podcast feeds. We hope you enjoy it. We tried really hard to make sure we get it out there on that time every week. We're recording this literally We'll finish recording this 12 hours before I go live on YouTube, and I've got to edit it, and I've got some other writing to do tonight. We are a little crazy here at Baseball America. You know, Jeff's got more writing to do on the top 30s too. We're going to kind of finish this, wrap this up, and get back to working, because podcasting is too fun, you know. So, but we hope you enjoy it. Again, if you could subscribe, both either on the podcast feed or if you aren't subscribed on YouTube, subscribe, click the bell, then you know when our new ones come out. And on top of that, if you have thoughts, have questions, I try to always read the comments. I try to respond to as many as I can. So leave a comment on the YouTube channel and we'll try to respond to it as well. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.